Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hey, everyone.
So, Mara, you and I are both huge fans of Another World, and there is more fun Bay City news about Days to share. So, Linda Dano, who played Felicia Gallant and won an Emmy for her efforts before moving on to play Ray Cummings on the whole ABC lineup, has been cast as Vivian Alamein. Now, of course, the role of Vivian was originated by Louise Sorrell, who appeared on the soap earlier this year. But because of COVID, Louise, who is New York-based, couldn't make it back in time. And, you know, we've certainly seen this role recast before, most notably with One Life to Live alum Robin Strasser. And I'm just so excited to see what Linda is going to bring. You know, because of the news last week about Jack A. Harry, I feel so many fans are hoping to see Linda and Jack A. in scenes together, since they worked together on Another World as Felicia and Lily. But I hear they are not going to cross over at this point, but that doesn't mean it still can't happen.
I am excited to see both of these women in Salem for sure. One of my favorite little fun digest memories is getting to interview Jack A. Harry. I don't remember precisely why, but presumably for some sort of catching up piece. And I told her right when we got on the phone that all of my friends were super jealous that I got to talk to her. And she said, "Rub it in, baby." You know, she is just such a magnetic on-screen presence, and it's going to be so fun having her back on daytime. And then, of course, there's Linda, another performer with crazy charisma. You know, she just evokes so much nostalgia in me. Felicia Gallant was such a fixture of my childhood, you know? And she's such an inspired choice for Vivian, I think, given that Louise wasn't able to return. I think it's always smart if a role as iconic as Vivian has to be recast to fill the shoes with someone the audience will be excited to see. And Linda was such a fixture on the NBC daytime lineup. I'm sure there was a lot of viewer overlap between Days and AW, and it kind of softens the blow of Louise's absence to tap someone like Linda, who's such a pro and has such a distinguished daytime career.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I feel we haven't seen a huge amount of Another World alums back on daytime. You know, I recently caught up with Julian McMahon, who played Ian Rain, for a piece about his show, FBI Most Wanted. And, you know, we were taking a long walk down Bay City memory lane. And he was asking, like, if I knew how Paul Michael Valley was doing. And he was remembering how sweet Judy Evans was to him when he started. And it was just such like a solid, warm, fuzzy moment thinking back on that show. I mean, in that same vein, you know, I was trying to pull together a photo spread of old holiday moments for our new issue. And I just had the most delightful time looking back at old pics from As the World Turns, Guiding Light, and Another World, you know, for starters. That's just another one of the perks of the job, is being able to go back on these deep soap dives. And it's work related.
Yeah, we get to feel this ongoing connection to these shows of yore via our work. And that's definitely a special thing. You know, I put together the feature This Week in Soap History for the magazine, and also the five things that happened on soaps on this day for our website and social media. So literally not a day goes by that I'm not doing something for my job that involves these defunct shows that I loved so much. But I do think it's interesting, and I don't know entirely why this is, that the other New York shows that were canceled in the wake of Another World, that would be in order of cancellation, Guiding Light, As the World Turns, All My Children, and One Life to Live, they all have a bunch of cast members on the four shows still on the air. I mean, GH has alums of all four of those shows in key roles.
Wow.
Whereas, you know, that's not so much the case with Another World. Of course, there's Judy Evans, but she had been on Days before her AW years. and Rena Sofer, B&B's Quinn, had done a short-term role in the late 1980s. And we've certainly seen other people pop up here and there over the years, but there just wasn't this flood of Another World actors getting snapped up by the other shows. And that's such a shame because it was so very filled with talent.
Oh, beyond. I mean, that's also the whole East Coast versus West Coast situation. You know, most of these Another World actors are East Coast based. And with all the shows filming in Los Angeles, it requires so much coordination and travel. And especially now, you know, travel is so hard and it's just such a shame. When I did a catching up with Stephen Schnetzer, who famously played Cass Winthrop, he did mention to me that one of the LA shows had reached out to him to come on for a handful of episodes. And this was, you know, pre-pandemic, but he said that once you break down what's really being asked, it's just a lot of time and effort for something that you're traveling to do. And I totally get it. You know, which is why it's always exciting when it does work out and we do get to see someone like Linda again.
Yeah, well, even if they may not be back in the daytime fold, a lot of Another World alums have certainly done very well for themselves in the wider world of entertainment. You know, this is a show that once played home to Morgan Freeman, Rue McClanahan, Kira Sedgwick, Ray Liotta, Anne H., to name just a few.
And to name one more, our guest today, Amy Carlson, who has had a most impressive primetime career since leaving the role of Bay City's Josie. So let's check in with her and see what she's been up to. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We are so excited to catch up with you.
Me too.
Well, let us start at the beginning. You were born in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, as one of four kids. So tell us about when your interest in performing emerged.
Well, when I was young, I really liked, I wanted to do the school plays, and there was plays in elementary school. And I remember wanting to be in a play that was about a bear, and I auditioned. I really wanted to be the bear, but the problem was the bear's name was Herman, so I didn't get the part, but that drove me to want to get more parts, and I acted in junior high. But then basically in high school, I started running, and it took so much time, and we would go downstate. We were quite good, and I ran with my little sister. She was amazing. Anyway, so we were very competitive, and it took up a lot of time, so I couldn't do theater at the same time, so I sort of just dropped out of theater and focused on athletics all through high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you were active in theater in college, but how did you make the leap into professional acting?
So in college, instead of going on a junior year abroad, what I did was I went and did an urban studies program in Chicago. And at that point, I had been acting a little bit in college, doing a lot of plays, and I had become injured. I went down an athletic scholarship and I got injured, and then my sister said, come and audition on this play. So I ended up doing this Lanford Wilson play with her, and she played my mom. Anyway, so I did a lot of, I was like, this is really exciting and I want to see if I can do this, but how does one become an actor outside of college? So on the urban studies program, you had to have an internship. And what I did was I interned at this agency in Chicago called the Getty's Agency. And they had like Dennis Farina, they had Amy Morton, they had, so many like big Chicago actors, and I was basically stuffing envelopes with their headshots and sending them out for auditions. But I saw how the inside of an agency worked, and I was like, oh, okay, so I need a headshot, I need this, I need that. And so when I graduated from college, I kind of had worked out a game plan of how to get an agent and start working. Like, I was very methodical about it.
Well, it worked out well for you. So you first came on our radar in 1993 when you landed the role of Josie Watts on Another World. So what do you remember about that audition process?
So I had, just speaking about agents, so I had recently switched agencies, and I had this agent named Chuck Saucier, and he was at an agency called Jefferson and Associates, and he had just moved from New York. So he was very connected in the New York scene. He knew Jeffrey Johnson, the casting director. And he was representing me, and I was doing a lot of TV in Chicago at the time. I was working on this show called The Untouchables with William Forsythe, and I was doing this other show called Missing Persons with Daniel J. Travanti from Hill Street Blues. So, and I was playing multiple characters. They would just change my hair, and I did multiple episodes on both shows. And Jeffrey Johnson called Chuck in Chicago because they only look in New York or wherever is local. But he said, you don't happen to have someone who's like this. And he described Josie. And Chuck was like, actually, I do have someone. So I think they sent some tape from one of these shows I was doing. And Jeffrey was like, yes. And so they flew me out to New York, which I had never been. They put me up at a hotel near Grand. I remember it was near Grand Central. I think it was the Hyatt, if I remember. It was something like that. And I remember just walking around Grand Central, just being like, where am I? What is this? And I went shopping with my mom in Chicago. I was like, I have to have a nice outfit. And so I got these outfits and was in New York. And then I went and I screen tested. And there were other girls there. It was like, you know, like some New York, like rental space. And, but they, it was quite serious audition. And I screen tested with Matt Crane. And I ended up having to kiss the, every soap audition. And I later auditioned people too for jobs. But like if you're auditioning people, like it is like a day of, it's a not a COVID friendly day, let's say that. It is a day of making out with people who are testing. I mean, I had to end up kissing Matt Crane. And I remember Dennis, who was the stage manager at the time, he said to me years later when I was at the job for and had the job, or maybe it was even after, and he was just like, this girl's never gonna get the part, this girl looks rough. But I played it that way because like I had prepared this, they told me the character had gone off to be a model and had gotten caught up in like a prostitution ring. The thing is, she was wounded, you know, and so I played her wounded.
Obviously, even though you'd done some episodic work, daytime is a whole other ball game in terms of workload, line memorization, pace of production, and so forth. What was it like for you to make that adjustment?
I had a really strong knack. When I was in college doing plays, memorization was very easy for me. And I would often lay, you know, when you're like lying near the stage, when people are running their scenes, and when they call line, I would just tell them their line before the stage manager had time to look down, because my brain just, it was not a problem, you know, so that was really easy. The thing that was hard for me that I really learned, and it was such a great lesson when I worked on the soaps, was emotional preparation. You have to be ready at go time. And it's, you know, it's like, be ready, because you've got like a big emotional scene. You have to just like drop right in and be completely emotionally flexible. So the soaps were a really good training for me in terms of that. But I was very intimidated by the older actresses the who were on the show. So that was the hard part for me. That was harder than the lines or the acting. It was like, the soap opera divas were scary to me when I got there.
Definitely had like a lot of young people in your story. When you look back, who were you close to there?
I was very close with Anna Holbrook, and I still am very close with her. She really took me under her wing, and she was super kind to me and helped me out. Initially, also Julian, who I'm working with now on FBI Most Wanted, he and I worked together, and we were both like kind of green in New York, and we were close. Who else originally? David Forsythe was amazing. Mm-hmm. And this producer, John Valente, who I called, he took me aside after a while because my David Forsythe played John, and I was straight from Chicago, and I didn't know that I said Jan. It was Jan. And he was like, Amy, you have to stop saying Jan. It's not Jan. It's John. And I was like, I say John? Anyway.
Bay City was in Illinois. What's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think because the producer's name was John, that he was like, it's not Jan, it's John. Okay, I got to get rid of the Chicago accent. So anyway. Yeah, and who else was I working with at the beginning? Diego Serrano came on pretty quickly. We were friends. Robin Christopher, Matt Crane, and I were friends. And then later, Dahlia Salem and I, she came on, and I was close with her. And Linda, I mean, Linda Dano is like one of the most generous people on the planet. I mean, literally, she and Dahlia and I would ride into the set because they didn't pick people up. We met at a weird diner that was 24 hours so that we could stand somewhere inside at 5 o'clock in the morning when the car pulled up and we all got in the car. And I would ride in with Linda, who was on this like Atkins diet before anyone had heard of Atkins or whatever. She'd be munching on a big giant turkey leg at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was just like, what is going on? But she was really, had a great sense of humor about it all, was really supportive. And I mean, she and I are still close. And I mean, she's just a phenomenal human being. So,
well, as Josie, you lived out so many different iterations of the character. She went through so much. You did so much heavy dramatic storytelling. What's, you know, what stands out to you as like particularly memorable storyline moments that you experienced as Josie?
Well, it's so funny when people say to me who didn't watch Another World, they said, they always ask me like, well, what did you play on the soap? And I always say, short answer, hooker turned cop. And they're like, oh, that's an obvious progression. And I was like, yeah, it was a very obvious progression. But what stands out to me is, in terms of the experiences with Josie, it's like she showed up. She was really wounded. Her mom, her mama was very, she was suffering from some mental illness. And so it took a while for me and for the writers to sort of figure out like, well, where is this character going to go? And I'm trying to think like, what was it that in me or in them that sparked this idea that Josie would become a cop? Whoever came up with that idea, that was a real stroke of genius, because it gave this fragile character, you know, a broken character, damaged character, something to go for and some place to find strength. And it was just a really genius storyline. And it allowed me to work with Rhonda Ross, and who's still a very, very good friend of mine. And it was just like a really, that transition was, I think, just a stroke of genius on the writers. And I wish I could remember. It might come to me, but like, I don't really exactly remember what was the turning point.
I don't either.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's like, get the idea to become a cop.
But it was like 25 years ago at this point. I mean.
Oh my God, it was like lifetimes ago. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly, but that's like really like the most fascinating thing I think about the soaps, especially that particular time where they were less precious, you know what I'm saying? Because there was a lot, so they could do a lot of different things. And the writers could really be inspired by a particular actor and what they were giving them and then write for that.
Right.
And that's so cool. They could just be like, I mean, we were just like, they're like paper dolls, you know, just like, oh, I see that doll's armband's like that. Let's make her do that. Let's have her be a gymnast. You know, I don't know.
No, it's true. Well, you did stay there until 1998. What, how'd you make the decision to leave?
I did my first contract, and then I negotiated for like one more year because I knew that I wanted to explore other things. But I wanted to sort of finish the storyline that they had. And it was right in the middle. Like my contract came up right in the middle of the stride of that story. And I was really having fun, but I knew that I wanted to give myself a chance to try to do other things. So I just decided that it was time. And once I got her married.
And on the cover of Soap Opera Digest, as yes. I recall.
Yes, yes. I still have copies of that, by the way. And then I was like, well, I think it's time to do other things. Mm-hmm. But what's funny was when I first started on Another World, I was in New York and I was working so little. I was like, I think I have to wait tables because I couldn't pay my rent. I was like using my Bloomie's card to like get lunch because I was like, this girl's got to work more because you get paid per episode. So I was working like once a month and it was not a big salary. So I was like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my bills? Anyway, but then I started working more. So that was really helpful. Mm-hmm. That's just a side note because I was always like, oh, I'm on TV. I should be able to afford nice clothes. And no, not if your character's only working once a month. You cannot afford nice clothes. So that's a real misnomer for me. Like, no, you don't have it made. You have to work more. Anyway, when I left, the soaps, I moved to LA, and I was in LA for about a year and a half, and did like different episodes of TV and stuff like that. And then eventually, I moved back east to do a series called Falcone, which we shot in Toronto. And this was before 9/11, so I just moved back to New York, and I would just fly up and fly back. You know, it was really easy. You remember those days without all the security, and you could just hop on a plane to Toronto. Yeah. So that's what I did. And then after Falcone, I got Third Watch, and so I stayed in New York and did Third Watch.
Well, that's one of my favorite shows. What stands out to you about your experience on that set?
On Third Watch?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that set was so chaotic. It was always a ton of cast members, and it was a ton of just explosions and emergency vehicles. And I mean, it was always, we would shoot in Harlem a lot, and it just was chaos, sheer chaos. I don't know how, that was the hardest show to shoot, just because of, we were creating chaos and then managing chaos and shooting it. So, but it was really good. And that was a really meta experience, because I was playing a firefighter when 9/11 happened. Mm. A lot of friends, we lost 13 people who worked on the set at 9/11, background actors and cops, people that we knew, the guy who from Rescue 3, who taught me to use the fire hose and stuff. He died in 9/11. It was just like a lot of meta experience. It was like a very weirdly powerful experience on so many different levels that crossed over from entertainment into real life, and it was intense.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Did you feel at the time when you got that show that it would be a game changer for you? And I mean, you had gotten some really good credits prior to that, you know, in NYPD, like CSI, Law and Order, that kind of stuff. But this was a real, you know, long-term role.
Well, you know, just to harken back to the soaps, like, there was something about that character that I didn't really realize. You know, people often will stop me and tell me about how Josie was really meant something to them. And then same thing with that. Like, there was something about that character, Alex Taylor, that really resonated with people somehow. So, no, I didn't know it at the time, because I felt she didn't do a ton. She was like, kind of like, you know, like the oddball girl in the firehouse, you know. But then again, like, I had so many, I think at the time there was only 19 female firefighters in New York City in the FDNY. So yeah, so I knew like most of them, but they would reach out to me and tell me how much that character meant to them. And also just people, I don't know, she struck a chord with people, maybe because of her loss, echoed the loss of so many Americans at that time, because mm-hmm. She lost her father in 9/11, and she was sort of embodying that. But yeah, I didn't really know it at the time, but still people will stop me about Alex Taylor.
Well, you followed up that series with another series, Trial by Jury, where you got to work with the legendary Bebe Neuwirth, among others. What was your experience on that show like?
I threw my hip out from sitting cross-legged behind a bench for so many hours at a time. No, I'm joking. I literally did, though, because you would have to, they would be like, your legs are crossed that way, and you would sit there for so long in these courtroom scenes that, like, you know, if you sit cross-legged one way for too long, I mean, that was like the most physically demanding show for doing nothing because of the way we had to sit. You can't cross that way. You're across this way. I'm like, okay, but it's like 5 hours in. I got to uncross. Anyway, that show was great. There are so many terrific actors. The thing that stands out about that show is how many terrific actors went through that set, from Candace Bergen to Bradley Cooper to, Angela Lansbury. My God, I was like, Agatha Christie, no, Angela Lansbury, what's wrong with me? Of course, Angela Lansbury, Alfred Molina, like, so many people, Elizabeth Moss, like just so many incredible, if you go back and look at who worked on Trial by Jury, like we had the creme de la creme of actors work to work with. And so that was just fantastic. And sadly, I was there. I remember being feeling like a Shirley MacLaine in terms of endearment because Jerry Orbach was so sick at the time. And I was like, you know, I remember sitting with him in his room and he was just like sweating. And he was very close to his death and he had cancer. And I'm like, you should just go home. And he was showing me, he was the sweetest, like most interesting, longest career man, and showing me different memorabilia in his dressing room and whatnot. But I was like, literally like, shoot the scene, get the guy, shoot the scene. I was like, get him out of here. You know, I was like the scene in terms of the German, I wanted to run down his head and be like, get him out of here. But he was there very incredible and patient. And I couldn't believe the strength that he had to continue shooting it for as long as he did when he was so sick.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2010, you began your 7-year association with the CBS mega hit Blue Bloods, playing Linda Reagan, wife to Donnie Wahlberg's Danny. So did you have any idea when you were cast that the show would become such a big hit?
Well, yes, only because of, I didn't know if it would be a hit, but I knew that it was going to definitely get to air because, you know, you do so many pilots. I mean, the LA is like the boulevard of broken dreams with discarded pilots, actors with a pilot and never getting on the air, you know. But I knew because when I was cast, it was Leonard Goldberg and Tom Selleck. And I was like, oh, this thing's going, this is going, you know. And it was the same cast of Bowling Misha, my God, my brain today. It was the same casting directors from Third Watch. Anyway, so they're fantastic. So when I auditioned, they were like, well, this is to play the wife of Donnie Wahlberg. And I was just like, oh, done. Like, we're such a good match. Like, of course they should have this. But I didn't think about it. And then they called me and they're like, you got that part. So I was like, yes, that is a good choice. We would be really great together.
I was born to play Donnie Wahlberg's wife.
Yeah, they agreed. So I was like, great. And I had a little baby at the time. And Nigel, my son, was a baby. And I flew to Toronto. And we shot the pilot. And and I remember really being super, super psyched because I had met Donnie before. But we had really, and I didn't really know his music, strangely enough, because I was like, I was a grunge girl during that time. Anyway. But he and I had great chemistry on set. So I was like, oh, this is great. This will be great. And so there it went.
I have a procedural question about shooting that show. Did you ever like really eat the food during all the family dinners?
Yes. You always eat the food. You have to, well, Bridget never eats the food. She just, if you watch the show, she just pushes the food around, but, and does a lot of cutting. Donnie eats all the food, but you pick one thing. The trick is to pick one thing and stick with it. Otherwise, you will get really sick. Like Donnie's always eating like beans, which make him very gassy. And then I learned to eat cucumbers because there's so much water in them, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would be like, give me the cucumbers. Because there was one show where I remarked about how much I love the turkey meatballs. And so I had to eat the turkey meatballs. Oh my God, I was like lying down in my dressing room. It was like in so much pain afterwards. Initially Tom was like, we should get spit buckets because this is just, and this helps you do like 2 takes and you're done. You know, you get it out there, it's 3 cameras, they're shooting it all at the same time. When you're shooting on film, you're doing like 15 takes, you know, the wide, this, the medium, the close-up, the, you know, like, and then you turn around and you do it again the same, you know, so it's like so many more takes, so much more food. Blech, yuck.
Well, Danny and Linda's relationship did mean a lot to viewers. What does it mean to you that relationship really struck such a chord with them?
Oh, I have so many, the fans from Blue Bloods are amazing. And Third Watch, like pretty much every, I've just had some really amazing, incredible people reach out about that relationship. And it makes me really proud because when I first saw the words on the page and this, but the potential of these characters, I had been, and I think I mentioned this to you, Stephanie, at some point in a conversation, a big fan of Friday Night Lights. I love that show. I love that relationship with Coach and
Tammy Taylor.
Tammy Taylor, yes, Coach Taylor and Tammy. And I just was like, oh, this is so refreshing to see like a real relationship on television. So that is what I had in my mind when we started building those characters. And so, you know, there's you look for the opportunities. And so I'm just really proud that people picked up on the many layers that we tried to put into that relationship. Mm-hmm.
So you had been on the show 7 seasons when you chose to leave. When did you decide to leave?
What made me decide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I really have never talked about it. Oh. it was clear to me that whenever I met a fan, they'd be like, I love your character so much. Why don't they do more with her? And I would say, I don't know. And every single time I meet someone, I love that character. I love that relationship. Why don't they do more with it? And I would say, I don't know. And I went to the head writer many times and I gave him a lot of ideas, but it was my show and they just weren't interested. And as an actor, I needed more to do. Even though I was super grateful, and I'm still grateful to the show for what opportunities I had, I saw the writing on the wall. And they didn't convince me otherwise. They didn't convince me that the writing was on the wall. You know? So, it was a really painful process. And I could go into more depth about it, but just trust me that it was a very painful process.
Well, we still pretty much can see you every day of the week because that show runs so many repeats on so many different channels. But you are back on CBS now in the recurring role on FBI Most Wanted, which you mentioned stars Julian McMahon. So tell us how the gig came about and about your new character, Jackie Ward.
So I worked for Dick Wolf, as we talked about, on Trial by Jury. And he's just a great employer. Like he's takes care of his people. Like he tells great stories. I ran into him at an event where I was giving an award to some outstanding officers, law enforcement officers. And I was like, hey, I love working for you. I was like, I'd love to work for you again sometime. That would be amazing. You see how subtle I was? He was like, you have a job. And I was like, yeah, I know. Well, then time passed and here I was. And I ran into his casting director and Jonathan Strauss. And when I was at a play, I went to see Bobby Cannavale, who was on Third Watch, and Rose Byrne in this incredible production of BAM right before COVID hit of Madea. And I was like, you still doing all those Chicago Med things and all that? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, God, I would love to do one of those shows. And he was like, let's look for something. I'll keep my eyes out. I'm glad you're, you know, so let's find something. And then I auditioned for something for FBI. I was a different character. And then my agent, my manager called me and they were like, well, they have an offer for you. And I was like, oh, did I get that one I auditioned for? Because I didn't feel like it was totally right for me. But I was like, okay. And they're like, no. And then they read this description of this character, Jackie Ward. And I was silent afterwards because they were like, are you there? Do we lose you? And I was like, that is like a character I have dreamed of in my mind. The way they described this character was like, she lives in her car and she's a bounty hunter and she's brash and she's, foul mouth and she's worships at the altar of Dolly Parton. And I was just like, who dreamt up, who knows, who's been spying in my window? So I was like, yay, I can't believe it. So I was like, just jumping at the opportunity. So I accepted the offer. And also, I had watched the show because I was flipping channels and there was Julian. And so I stopped and went, oh, what's Julian doing? And I watched a show and I was a fan of the show. I was like, well, this is a really good show. And I was so happy for him. And I was so happy to see him on the air. And then so right away I knew that like, that was like a good environment and that could be a great place to work.
What was it like to work with Julian again?
Amazing. I mean, I look at pictures of us back in the day because he was, I worked with him right away when I was on Another World. So it was a long time ago. But you know, like you kind of forget when it's like 25 years ago, we're talking about like we forget, but once you get your mind into that situation, you remember like how young we were and what that experience was like to both be newbies on the set. And it's like, it's a very tender thing to remember, like, oh my God, we started out together. And he has always been who he is. And he is very conscientious, very kind, very supportive, like so supportive on set. And everything I did, he'd be like, I love it. Oh my God, this is great. Like he couldn't have been more. It was such an uplifting set because they were so supportive of me. And Callan Lutz was like, they're just like cheerleading and just like, oh my God, we love what you're doing. We love what you're doing. We want to see more of you. And like, I was like, oh my God, this feels so great to have them be like, we want to see more of you and we want you to do more. And then have this excitement. Like it felt very rewarding to me to have this experience right now. It's been really great.
Wonderful.
And it's recurring right now, but there is a possibility that we could see much more of you in a recurring role, correct?
Well, I was slated to do one in February, and then the morning after it aired, the network emailed me like, can you do one in January too? And I was like, oh, yay! Sure!
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was really nice. It felt so nice, and I was super appreciative and grateful.
Now, away from work, your life is also very full. You and your husband, Sid Butler, who is a musician and a member of the house band of Late Night with Seth Meyers. You have two children, a son and a daughter. So first tell us, how did you meet Sid?
Well, when I was on Another World, all the camera crew and hair and makeup and everything, their weekend job was they worked on Saturday Night Live. So they would often say like, you know, this is before 9/11 too, where there was less security. And they'd be like, come up and watch. And I'd be like, yes, I'm going to do that. So I was always like sneaking around Saturday Night Live. I shouldn't say this, but it's true. And you can't do that anymore. Yeah, it's much more strict. But back in the day, like I would be like hanging out backstage and I would watch the shows. So I did that a couple times as a guest of the people who were on crew. And then it was the season finale party and a friend of mine, who I had met through a friend. She was a loose acquaintance, you know, the power of loose acquaintances. She said, oh, can my brother come with to this party, the Saturday Night Live season finale party? And I remember it was Jeff Goldblum and Natalie Imbruglia. That'll date it. Remember her song, Torn? Okay. So that was who the guests were. And he came with, and we hung out at the party. I'm like, this guy's really fun. He's really nice. And I remember Molly Shannon was like, he's a good one. He's polite. He's a keeper. And so then he just like called me 3 days later, jerk.
And, 3 day rule.
Yeah, the 3 day rule. Exactly. I was like, what is going on? And he met me, get this, after because the Emmys are right around the same time as the season finale because they both were in May, June, right? And he met me at the Fashion Cafe. Remember the Fashion Cafe?
Yes. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. So we were at the Fashion Cafe and it was like all the soap opera Emmys. We were all like reunion of the homecoming queens. Like it was decked to the nines, you know? And we were all just glistening with sparkle. And he showed up in his like Adidas hoodie. And like his Rod Laver's shoes and like, you know, like faded like gray chinos or something, super indie rocker, and was totally comfortable in this crowd of people who look like, you know, they were like going to the Emmys, which they were. So I was like, that's a very confident fellow. And he was very kind. And so that happened. Mm-hmm. The Fashion Cafe. It takes balls to show up to the Fashion Cafe and not be intimidated, especially when it's full of daytime actors.
That's amazing. The two of you have recently collaborated musically as well. You have a Christmas LP available under the band name Office Romance. It's called Holidays of Love. Tell us about that project.
Well, I love the holidays. In fact, we wrote an EP like 5 years ago, and one of the title tracks is I Love the Holidays. And so Sid and I are always looking to collaborate and do stuff together. So he and his bandmate from Les Savoy Fave, who's also on Late Night with Seth Meyers, and I, they wrote all this music, and then I'm the lyricist. So I wrote these three songs, like, I think it was like 5 years ago, might be longer. And then we were always like, well, we should do that again. So we were going to do another three song EP and of holiday songs. And then we just kept writing, and they just kept writing, and they kept like creating. And so we had, I think we had 12 songs, and they said, we recorded them last year. And then they said, but I didn't write lyrics, cause I was so like, oh my God, how am I going to write 10 songs? So then the lockdown happened in COVID, and Sid was like, well, there's nothing to do, Amy. Get going on those lyrics. So we were like in this lockdown, and I'm like, I was in this office where I sit right now, and I was just like listening and writing lyrics and trying different lyrics and doing this. And so we ended up recording with different artists remotely, you know, like they would record at their house on their gear and send it, like, we're like trying to take again, but a little bit more like this. And then in the end, we recorded these two. Matt Hitt did that a lot at home. God bless Matt Hitt. I love him. But the other, duo called Susu, Liza and Kia, we went to a studio all masked up, and they went to the sound room, and we finished, and it was done. And it was like, and it turned out great. I mean, I don't mean to like, I'm really proud of it though. I mean, the performances, and it just turned out, it's just a great holiday record. And so I'm just really, really proud of it. Thanks for asking.
And you sing on it. You're a singer. You're amazing.
Well, there was one song where I wrote that I was like, this is like a go-go song. It's like a real like poppy song. And we had some, people try it, and I was like, it's just not Belinda Carlisle enough. And then I was like, you know what? We happened to be in Martha's Vineyard in June, and no one was there. And we went to get out of the city just to have a break. And there was like this sweaty little recording studio that we recorded at. And it was sweaty because of COVID. You couldn't go, you couldn't open the doors. And me and my kids and Sid, it's like, we're recording this song about the magic of snow, and I'm just, the sweat is just pouring off of us. They couldn't like turn on the air because the sound, you know, and we were just, it was like 110 degrees in there, sweating, singing about snow. And the kids were like, we hate you, Mom. Now get up and do some cheering, guys. This is your part. And they were like, we hate child labor, mother. Got it done.
Well, where can people find it, and where can they find the video that you directed for it?
So the video is on YouTube. You just put in Magic in the Air, Amy Carlson, Office Romance. It should pop up. And oh, thank you for asking about the video I directed. Because I love it. It's very, people are like, oh, it's teary. It's perfect for the holidays. The other thing is they can find the record. Thank you. I was like, what else did you ask? You can find Office Romance. You can, if you have Alexa, you can say, Alexa, play the album Holidays of Love by Office Romance, and she will play it. Mm-hmm. I worked out the phrasing. Oh, now she's starting it. Alexa, stop. She's starting it, but that is the language you use.
Clearly.
Because there's other things, you know, other names like that. Or you can find it. It's on Spotify. It's on Amazon. We've been selling CDs, and they keep selling out of CDs on because who buys CDs? A lot of people apparently buy CDs. Spotify, what else? Amazon, iTunes, like all the, pretty much like, yeah. Anywhere you pick it, you'll find it.
Wherever fine music is sold.
Thank you.
That's right. And before we let you go, just tell us about the other project that you have that is making the round at film festivals.
Oh, you're so sweet to ask. So I directed a short film called The Letter, and it was shot in the fall of 2019 in New York over a weekend. And I loved that experience, and I acted in it because I'm a cheap hire, and I got Scott Cohen, who's a brilliant actor, who I worked on Trial by Jury with, and the whole crew was Third Watch people, was who I reconnected with by doing a film with Jason Wiles in the spring of well, I forget when, 2018, maybe 2019, I don't even remember, but anyway, we did his film, and it was a labor of love. Sid came up with a concept, and I tweaked the script to make the locations easier to shoot at for one weekend. And I shot it, and it won. I won Best Director and Best Actor at the Hollywood International Women's Film Festival, which was a great honor. And now it's on. It's in contention for the short films at Cannes, and it's won different accolades here and there. And it's like my new passion. So now I'm putting together a script to shoot next summer.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So I love it.
So last question for you. I feel that a lot of people listening have probably been watching you and been a fan since you first joined Another World. So we're talking many years of Amy Carlson fanship. What is your message to those fans who followed you from the very beginning of your career?
I love them from the bottom of my heart. I have ornaments. I love the holidays. I have some ornaments in my tree that were gifts given to me from Another World fans.
Wow.
And there's something just really special about people who have connected with you since the beginning of your career. And that's how I feel. And in some ways, like, my stories are their stories because we connect with people on screen who have something to say to their heart and their story and their soul. So in that way, the people who appreciate my work, I feel connected to them in a very strong way, because there's a reason that they're fans of mine, and mutual, you know, is because we have something in common in our hearts. And so I feel connected to my fans, and I'm so grateful to them.
Well, Amy, thank you so much. It was so great to catch up with you. Anyone who's listening, I have listened to the holiday album. It's great. Go get it. And have a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for taking the time. It was great to take this time with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Amy Carlson for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.